Good afternoon. I am Matthew Caruana Galizia, and I will be presenting today's edition of It's Debatable. This is a weekly discussion of current affairs in its second series. The program is run by the Department of International Relations in the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta, as part of the course assessment for undergraduate students. Today's participating students are Marin Lin from Canada, Haruna Nakau from Japan, Francesca Muru from Italy, and Miranda Kauki. The question we are asking today is, how far should legal immigration be a matter of concern for developed states? Miranda and Francesca will be discussing legal migration in Malta, while Marin and Haruna have focused their research on Canada and Japan. After the break, we will have a short intervention by Xavier Rizzo from the Center for Labour Studies at the University of Malta. Before starting today's debate, Dr. Isabel Kalea will give us an introduction to the topic.
Thank you, Matthew. Well, Europe today is struggling with an ageing population and falling birth rates. UN statistics indicate that for the entire region, projected population growth remains minimal, and that by 2025, the majority of the population would be over 40. The EU requires an annual inflow of nearly 3 million migrants a year, or roughly twice the present legal and illegal flows from outside the EU, to prevent the future support ratio of those aged 15 to 64 to those aged 65 and over dropping from about 4 at present to below 3. The choice for Europe is only between legal and illegal migrants. In the post-war period, Europe fueled its economic recovery by the importation of large number of immigrants. One such case was the movement of southerners to the north. In turn, the economies of the south were stimulated by remittances and educational and cultural returns. This dynamic helped to create a region of shared prosperity based on an understanding of reciprocal needs. However, today, despite the need in Europe for labour and the need to rejuvenate their populations, immigration policies remain highly restrictive and outdated. The EU Commission, in the light of received data, did launch a public debate on economic migration in 1999. In June 2003, the Commission published a communication on immigration, integration and employment, which acknowledged the impact of demographic decline and ageing on the economy and stressed the need to review immigration policies in the longer term. It also released a white paper on the subject in June 2005 and an updated report in July 2006. A report brought out in 2006 from the International Organization for Migration also details the efforts of the Global Commission on International Migration, which reported to the United Nations Secretary General on the framework for the formulation of a coherent, comprehensive and global response to the issue of international migration, and paid explicit attention to the role that measures to optimize development impacts of migration can play in realizing the potential of human mobility. The GCIM recommends that international migration should become an integral part of national, regional and global strategies for economic growth in both the developing and the developed world. This, however, will require devising measures to harness the development potential that immigration from developing countries can bring, while at the same time ensuring that the depletion of highly skilled workers does not damage development outcomes. Today's program will view attitudes, implications and policies of legal migration in Canada, Japan and Malta.
Thank you, Dr. Kalea. After that introduction, we can begin the discussion. Miranda, what types of immigrants are coming to Malta?
Malta has both legal and illegal migrants coming up its shores. Legal migrants are mainly people who come from non-EU member states to study here or to find work. Many of these migrants are granted visas, and so they have the right to stay in Malta. Out of the 45% of illegal immigrants that reach Malta, 5% are given refugee status and 40% are given human rights protection, which is considered to be the highest rate of acceptance in the EU. A white paper suggesting the grant of Maltese citizenship to refugees resident in Malta for over 10 years was issued in 2005. However, if you ask a Maltese citizen about migration, they all think that the majority of migrants in Malta are illegal. It is true that most of the migrants come into Malta illegally, but most of them have their status regularized after being recognized as refugees or given humanitarian status.
Thank you. Francesca, a few days ago I read a report by the Malta Medical Association that found that over 40% of medical graduates leave the island never to return. Do you think that Malta is suffering from a case of reverse immigration?
I mean, yes, I do. People of all countries are constantly in search of better living conditions for themselves and their families, and the Maltese are no different. Migrating in search of work and better opportunity is not something new to Malta. In fact, Malta has a long historical tradition dating back to the early 19th century and continues to this day. Small pockets of people that still call Malta home have opted to settle in countries such as the UK, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and various other European countries. In fact, it would be extremely difficult if you could find a household in Malta that does not have family abroad or that does not know someone who lives abroad. It is true that a number of people who choose to leave Malta in search of work has decreased since Malta joined the EU. This is due partly to the expected growth in the economy, but Malta is still losing some of its own in the search of better work opportunities. And we see this especially among the skilled workers, which is ironic considering that we are experiencing a growing need for skilled labour. Professionals that are more likely to leave are among the engineering, doctors, nurses and accountants. And this is a brain drain, and it starts here at the university. In an informal survey conducted early last week among a number of medical students and engineering students, we found that one out of every five students has considered leaving Malta as a possible option, and that one in three considers finding a job outside Malta as a definite possibility. Official statistics show that between 1994 and 2003, 166 hospital doctors left Malta. Only 24 of them have returned. This figure is not significant until you realize that it makes up up to 62% of the number of hospital doctors registered with the Malta Medical Association for those 3 years, and they all graduated between 1992 and 2001.
Thank you. Miranda, how does this type of migration affect Maltese society?
When Malta joined the EU in 2004, Malta also accepted the Schengen Treaty that meant that citizens of the European Union could come and work or study in Malta. However, Malta was granted a derogation in this area that restricted the rights of EU individuals to come and work in Malta. However, Malta did not have a major increase of citizens of the EU coming to work here, since the wages of Malta are less than those of some European countries, so the effect was minimal. Malta has also accepted the principle of dual citizenship. That means that a person can have two citizenships, so one can live in two countries. Moreover, Malta also introduced the second-generation citizenships, where Maltese born to parents who were also born abroad would be able to apply for Maltese citizenship and acquire a Maltese passport. However, this also had little impact on the island, since those who come primarily for a holiday.
Thank you. Francesca, is the growing unemployment rate a cause of the brain drain that you spoke about?
It is true that Malta has a high unemployment rate, but it is no higher than other countries in the EU. And according to the labour force survey conducted earlier this year, the unemployment rate has dropped by 0.8% since last September. Besides, our economy is showing growth and is expected to grow further with the introduction of the euro. The growth is taking place in the very sector that depend much on skilled labourers. And as a result of this exodus local skilled labour, they are having to rely more and more on immigrant labour to fill these positions. That is not to say that the rate of unemployment has not been mentioned as a reason for the brain drain. In fact, 43% of those that migrated between 2001 and 2004 were described as not gainfully employed. But there is no one reason. The reasons given vary from profession to profession. The medical students, for example, who admit that they have no real difficulty finding employment, say that the only future they see in practicing their profession in Malta is low pay, long hours, and no room for career growth or the expansion of professional horizons, and the lack of competitive spirit that they would find elsewhere. Funnily enough, though, these reasons are similar to those given by most legal immigrants, those leaving their countries for, say, Canada, Japan, or Malta. They come here in search of work with the hope of finding better pay, better hours, better living conditions, and working conditions for themselves and their families.
Thank you. We will now have a short break. The discussion will then continue with a short intervention by Xavier Rizzo, Assistant Director at the Centre for Labour Studies at the University of Malta. Welcome back to the second part of It's Debatable, a weekly discussion of current affairs. Today we are discussing international migration. On the phone we have Xavier Rizzo, Assistant Director of the Centre for Labour Studies at the University of Malta. Xavier, how does international migration affect countries like Malta in terms of people coming and going?
Well, when talking about the impact of illegal immigration in Malta, we have got the point of departure should be that there has been a change in the structure of the labour market force in Malta. By the change, I mean we have got a more educated and a more skilled labour force, and even more an increase of non-manual workers, due, of course, to the expansion of the post-compulsory school in the 90s. And this category of workers seem to be very mobile. The immigration is not affecting this category of workers. Higher level of education all around arouse higher expectations, and this search for high-quality jobs. And they tend to be very mobile, and today there is quite a number of openings in EU, and these people are actually seeking pastures new. And therefore, what is happening actually in the labor market is that low-quality jobs requiring hard, strenuous effort, for example, jobs in the construction industry, are very often shunned by people occupying these because of these high expectations. In other words, shortages are being created, and immigrants tend to fill most of these shortages. And immigration has always been a question of pull and push factors. In other words, the fact that today Malta, which traditionally has been a country of out-migration, in other words, Maltese seeking pastures new in Australia, in Canada, and in other countries, today we are actually receiving immigrants. In other words, there must be some pull factors, whether they are better conditions of work, whether they have greater career opportunities, political stability, greater opportunities for children. Somewhere there must be some of the pull factors. And in other words, immigrants are not creating an oversupply of labor. Still, trade unions are wary about this influx of immigrants because immigrants, let's put it this way, they tend to accept lower conditions of work and lower pay. And the trade unions are afraid that they depress wages and even reduce their bargaining power as a trade union. However, I should say also that the short supply of labor is not only evident in low-paid and low-status jobs. For example, the majority of chefs in our hotels and restaurants are foreigners, which means that in spite of our advance in education, we have not supplied the number of chefs demanded by the hospitality and catering industry. In other words, here, even the illegal immigrants are actually filling a void which our educational system has still not supplied. Overall, I should say just to conclude, the impact on the local scene, I think the legal immigration on the labor market tends to be more positive sum rather than negative sum game. Immigrants motivate the Maltese to reach higher standards, aspire to higher status and professional jobs. For employers, let's put it this way, a larger reserve army of labor. But still, we are talking about a microeconomy, which still a very low activity rate, one of the lowest in Europe, about 54. I don't know the exact figure, but it's somewhere between 50. I don't have the statistics in front of me. It must be about 54 or 53%, a very low activity rate. And in other words, there are quite a number of people who are not in gainful employment in Malta, and also a low female participation rate in the labor market. Immigration has not helped to raise neither one or the other. But of course, immigration has actually made us aware, as I have already pointed out, the positive factor. In other words, there are quite a number, there must be some factors which are attracting people to come and settle and seek gainful employment in Malta. And immigration has made us aware of this positive factor, and we are actually striving to maintain these positive factors.
Thank you for your comments.
Marion, what are the structural forces that make Canada a model of stable multi-ethnic democracy?
Immigration plays a large role in Canadian international relations and has become a key element of its policy matrix, along with trade, foreign aid, peacekeeping, and peacemaking. According to the 2001 census, 18.4% of the population was born outside of Canada, the highest proportion in 70 years. Rather than challenging Canada's national identity, the concept of multiculturalism has become an indispensable characteristic. The French-Canadian struggle for recognition greatly contributed to the concept of multiculturalism within Canada. While the debate over biculturalism initially sparked a shift from unitary to dual thinking, it also inspired the greater effect of multiple thinking by making Canada more attractive to immigrants from many countries. However, it was not until the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms of 1982 that the concept of multiculturalism was defined. The Charter demarcated multiculturalism as a source of Canadian pride and a distinguishing factor of Canadian identity. Moreover, the Multiculturalism Act of 1988 viewed immigration as a solution to both demographic and economic ills in Canada. Immigration was viewed as a remedy for declining birth rates and labor shortages brought on by an aging population. Given Canada's below replacement birth rates over the past generation, some concerned policymakers have speculated about immigration as an alternative source to population growth. In the future, an immigrant inflow of working-age people may help to generate the revenue needed to sustain government pension plans, and some suggest age-based immigration to smooth out age gaps we see today in Canada's aging population. In global cities such as Toronto, where there is a convergence of managerial, administrative, and technical expertise, there is often a strong demand for low-wage services. With such large numbers of immigrants needing social services, it is not surprising to hear public expressions of alarm over Canada's capacity to absorb this inflow. Yet this immigration population growth can be the source of increased investment and consumption, stimulating rather than hindering economic growth. Furthermore, recent difficulty in finding qualified native workers encourages employers to recruit immigrant workers. Manufacturing employment is declining in relative importance, and the diverse sector now dominates urban employment sectors, whereas in the past, unskilled labor was absorbed in agriculture, transportation, construction, and of course manufacturing. Today, skilled, educated workers and professionals are needed in the labor market. However, there is still a demand for unskilled labor to fill low-wage employment that Canadians are increasingly avoiding. In addition, there is also a demand for investment in new capital. Therefore, immigrants as entrepreneurs are favorable for the Canadian economic landscape. Finally, immigration is also promoted by foreign policy and military action by core capitalist countries all over the world in order to ensure international security, protect foreign investments, and guarantee access to raw materials.
Haruna, Japan seems to contrast quite a lot with Canada. Why do you think Japanese are unfriendly to migrants?
There are some reasons for the circumstances. First, in Japan, Japanese has few opportunities to communicate with foreign people. It results from some conditions Japan has. There, Japan is formed by mainly one race. The race occupied 98% of Japanese population. Next, Japan is an island country, and Japan has a history of national isolation for 250 years. We have been building our original country without much invasion for a long time. Second, Japanese people don't get accustomed to contact with foreigners because there are much differences between Japanese and foreigners in Japan, such as life, culture, custom, language, and so on. As I told you before, we have built our original country without special change by foreigners. We penetrate the tie with other Japanese in the community. And that community is troublesome for the foreigner because the community must be alien to most foreign peoples. and also the language is a serious problem. Most Japanese can speak only Japanese because they don't need other languages for living in Japan, so they cannot communicate with foreign people in Japan well. Moreover, there are many troubles occurred by the differences between foreigners and Japanese, such as the noise problems, the way to throw garbage, and so on. That is why Japanese tend to have the thought that foreign people are too alien to understand. The thoughts result from our background. I can say that the result why most Japanese people don't welcome the immigration come from our background, such as history and culture. Nowadays, their attitude are changing well, little by little. But still now, Japan not accustomed to living with foreign people in Japan.
Marion, using Canada as an example, could you explain some of the social and economic benefits resulting from legal migration?
Well, as Francesca mentioned, households worldwide struggle with the early developing stage, use international migration as a means to diminish risk and further their economic potential. According to the U.S. New Immigrant Survey, the average earnings gain for the 230 new immigrants studied in this sample was more than $20,000. This suggests that the income gains from moving to a stronger institutional environment are large, even when the skills often do not transfer well. Contrary to complaints about the non-recognition of foreign credentials, foreign degrees are well recognized in the Canadian labor market, and studies show that immigrants to Canada pay more in taxes than they extract in social services, and that their incomes compare well to Canadian-born natives. Many domestic workers brought to Canada are the nannies to the children of Canada's baby boom generation, thus making possible the careers of thousands of other middle-class Canadian men and women. Although the consensus as to whether economic prosperity correlates with population has never been agreed upon, specific cases may prove otherwise. For example, the governments of economically depressed regions of Canada, such as the Maritime Provinces, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, struggle to stem their out-migration and to attract and retain immigrants to their provinces. Since 2001, nothing has changed in the Atlantic province of Nova Scotia. Frustrated by the lack of job opportunities where they live, many Nova Scotians, especially the young and those in rural areas, are still leaving. Many head to Alberta or other places where their chances of landing a decent-paying job are better. Fortunately, Nova Scotia's immigration totals continue to climb, and the province added 2,580 immigrants last year, the highest total in the Atlantic region. All the same, that number represents just a small fraction of the average 240,000 newcomers who arrive in Canada each year. The Canadian cities, and increasingly in other less populated regions, immigration has had a number of positive side effects socially. For instance, the public service sector has evolved significantly due to the large increases of non-European immigrants into Canada. Health service providers, for example, have had to care for a wider array of ethnicities, which has opened new doors for patient-doctor communications. Although the massive changes in housing and labor markets, education and healthcare, land use planning, policing, and other facets of social life because of immigration is highly controversial, Canadians should view this explosion of multiculturalism as a means to national unity, a kind of unity through diversity.
Thank you. Haruna, as you explained, Japan isn't exactly welcoming towards migrants, but why do you think it's still so attractive to them?
It is simple. It's because there are many works for foreign people. There are two types of immigrants, specialists and cheap laborers. And there are more cheap laborers than specialists in Japan. For the question, here I introduce push factors and pull factors in Japanese case. As push factors, there are bad economic situation, dissolution and disintegration of multicultural states accompanied by religious and ethnic conflict, discrimination on various grounds, political instability and wars, continuing armed conflict throughout the world, and uncontrollable population growth. On the other hand, the pull factors Japan has are shortage of manpower, comprehensive social security, positive economic situation, democratic systems of government, political and social stability, and expectations. Among their factors, economic situation is the biggest factor that pushes foreign people to Japan, and the factor of shortage of manpower pulls them from their home countries. Specialists came into Japan because their company require smart brain and cheap labor coming to Japan, also because Japan needs their convenience. Since Japan is now on the stage of aging society, we need young, cheap laborers for their business. In the both relationship, there are benefit. That is why Japan is attractive for foreign people, even if there is much difficulty to live in Japan.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Miranda, Francesca, Haruna, and Meren, for your comments. I would also like to thank Dr. Isabel Carlea and Xavier for their contributions. I hope you enjoyed today's debate. Please join us for the next edition of It's Debatable.